Well, hello there. Do you realize that we often miss out on so many opportunities on reaching certain goals and improving certain relationships because we don't know how to ask the right question in the right way? But this is a superpower that you and I can learn, and it has the power to transform not only our careers, but our teams, organizations, relationships, especially if you're on the introvert side. So yes, that's what you're going to learn today in my interview with Jeff Wetzler, who is the author of a book called Ask. He used to be a management consultant, but he's into reforming education. He has a company called Transcend, which is a nationally recognized innovation organization, and he's an expert on learning and human potential. And we've got him here in this episode. And let me tell you, there's this class you can take. It's a digital class and you can take it. It's one of the top university, and it's $5,000 to attend virtually. So you're getting probably at least $5,000 worth of content from this episode. So take notes. Here are three things that you're going to take away. And one of the big insights that I got from talking to Jeff is about people withholding information, right? That they're not telling you the whole story. They're not telling you what's really going on, especially if there's a problem, especially if things are not going well. They're not telling you. And the higher up you are in the organization, the worse it is. So the first major life-changing takeaway is going to be about making it safe for people to tell you the truth. And you may not even realize that people are intimidated by you, but if you have any kind of leadership position, they could be. So that's number one. Number two, the right mindset, which is leading with curiosity, but not just the curiosity to know more. It's a different kind of curiosity. And number three, how to squeeze more insight when you're listening to the answers of the questions that you're asking. So those are three career transforming insights that you're going to get today. I'm going to just turn you over to Jeff. We're going to start talking to Jeff right now. Thank you. So welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, Laura. It's great to be with you.
I am excited. I'm so excited to learn. I have my pen in my hand. So is this your first book? I know that you've been in like personal development and education a while, right? Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Absolutely. This is my first book. My career has kind of spanned back and forth between business and education. Mm-hmm. I started out in the world of management consulting, specifically focused on organizational development, leadership development, team dynamics. And it was really there that the topic of the book germinated. I had a chance to work in a consulting firm called Monitor Group, where there were a number of really leading experts, including someone named Chris Argyris, who was a professor of organizational behavior, who studied why it is that smart and successful people have such a hard time learning from each other and learning from other people. And sometimes that the smartest and most successful people are the worst at doing that. I learned a number of methods, which we can talk about during this conversation, that were for me really life-changing. And I saw how life-changing they were for many other people. And I got the opportunity to work with him and others to really teach these methods around the world, both to consultants and to clients in various corporations. And then I stepped away from the business world and took an operating role, actually with one of my clients at an organization called Teach for America, where I was responsible for the training and support and performance of the teachers across the country, working in some of the most challenging environments. And did that for about a decade. And then in 2015, co-founded a startup organization called Transcend, which is an education innovation organization that I co-lead. And we work with school communities across the country who want to really reimagine what's possible in education, rethink what schooling can be. But throughout all of those experiences, the skill set that I learned and developed at Monitor really was the most foundational set of ideas, tools, resources, not only for my own leadership, but also that I drew upon when developing other people as well. And I had the chance to kind of expand upon them and refine them in different contexts. And then a few years ago, I just felt like it was time to pay it forward. And so I decided to try to write this book just to really offer to other people what I have been so privileged to benefit from many, great mentors and teachers that I have had and that has made such a big difference for me.
I love that. My son was a teacher for Teach for America.
Oh,
for
wow.
1 year, he taught Spanish in Houston, Texas at a school. I don't think he was your best teacher. He went from there to the Peace Corps, was kind of lost for a while, but he's now a respectable architect. But
wow. Sounds like he's had quite a journey.
Yeah. So that's neither here nor there, but I definitely had fond memories of Teach for America. So I hear a lot, you know, I think from these super smart people when I'm coaching them, and what I hear is that their confidence comes from knowing their domain upside down, inside out, tie their hands behind their back, put a blindfold, and they can still tell you everything about their domain. And I think that maybe they're afraid that they're going to look dumb. Is that why they don't ask?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons why we don't ask questions. One of the most common is that we don't actually realize there's something to ask in the first place.
Good point.
As you kind of mentioned, we feel like we know things.
Yeah.
We've got expertise. We've got it figured out. And we walk around the world with a level of certainty. And in the book, I call it the certainty loop that we are trapped inside of. Basically, where our deepest assumptions of looking at the world color how we see the world, such that we perceive things in ways that just reinforce what we already believed. And we get that sensation of, here we go again. I know exactly who this is.
Confirmation bias.
Confirmation bias, all of that stuff. And so when we're stuck in that loop, it doesn't even occur to us to be curious about something, to ask a question. That is one of the reasons why we don't ask questions. Another is that sometimes we are curious, but we hesitate to ask the question because we don't know if the question will be welcome. We think this might be a sensitive question. This person might not take it the right way. And there's some interesting research which shows that more often than not, people welcome getting questions. Even questions that we think might be sensitive questions that we might hold back. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's limits to that. But oftentimes, we hold ourselves back from thinking because we aren't sure if the question will be well received. And then one other reason I'll just mention is that question asking is a skill set. And many of us have not been trained or taught how to actually ask quality questions. And so we have a relatively narrow repertoire of questions, and we don't know the other kinds of questions that we even could be asking.
Exactly. I think that comes just from our training in school. Like, I was a teacher at the university for 9 years, and is that going to be on the test? You know, that's the kind of the mentality even, you know, 20 years later. Well, if that's not on the test, then we're good, and I don't need to know. But could be missing out on something.
Well, and just to pull that thread a little more, the entire culture of schooling, which is something I think a lot about in my day job, is all about getting the right answer and giving the right answer on the test. And we reward students for answers more than for questions. There's very interesting research that shows that when children are young, they're bursting with questions. The older they get, the longer they spend in school, the number of questions that they ask just continues to decline. And even if you compare behavior at school versus behavior at home, far more questions get asked at home on average than get asked in school. So there's something in our education model that is really, I think, dampening curiosity.
Oh, for sure. Well, to begin with, I mean, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but I mean, it was designed to produce factory workers.
Exactly.
Who don't ask questions, like, just shut up and do your job.
Exactly.
And yes, I'm so glad to know that somebody as smart and clever as yourself is working to change that. Because
you're speaking the love language of my organization, Transcend.
Yeah, yes. All right, Jeff. So it's hard to know where to begin. Your book has so many good things. And one thing that really blew my mind is about people withholding information.
Yes.
I remember I worked in corporate America for a few years, not too long. And I remember people talking about information hoarding. That's one aspect of it. It's either, you know, I lose my power if you know what I know, but it could also be sensitive. It's not authorized. The lawyers, you know, there could be other reasons. Withholding information actually goes way beyond information hoarding, does it not? So enlighten us.
Well, this is the core problem that the book is trying to tackle, which is the idea that we are surrounded, every one of us is surrounded by people in our lives. That could be our coworkers, our clients, our investors, our, you know, our bosses, even friends and family. And the people around us have all kinds of knowledge and ideas and feedback and perspectives and experiences that if we could find out, we would both be way better off. We would make better decisions together. We would innovate together better. We would save time. We'd be closer. But it is so prevalent that we don't actually find out really some of the most important things that people are thinking and feeling. They simply don't tell us. And there's all kinds of, you know, research and organizations to show that, you know, in one study, 85% of people have said there's been something important that I didn't actually share with my manager. And most of the other people around me knew about it too. And none of us was talking about it. So this is a very, very well-documented phenomenon. And this is what the book is trying to tackle.
I think it's worse at the C-suite level.
Like, absolutely.
The higher you go, the less you know.
The more insulated you are from knowing really what people are actually thinking and feeling. In the first chapter of the book, I look into what are the biggest things, what are the most common patterns of things that the people around us are thinking and feeling but not telling us. It includes things like what they're struggling with, what they're up against, their biggest challenges, unlikely to tell us that. But it also includes things like what do they really think about an issue? Not what they think is the right thing to say or the acceptable thing to say, but like what's their true feeling on it? And really, where does that come from in their own experiences? It includes things like, you know, their most important feedback for us that they probably think we don't want to hear, or even their biggest and most audacious ideas that they think might be too crazy to say out loud, but might literally be the thing that is going to send our team or organization into a breakthrough. Those are the kinds of things that people are holding back. And so the book is really talking about, first of all, why do people hold these things back? But then most importantly, what can we do about it?
Exactly. Because there's lots of, you know, reasonable reason. And I know from the introvert side, we're like, well, if I bring this up, it's just going to make the meeting last longer. And I have work to do.
I don't have the energy for this.
Yes. And then there's a fear of offending or that, like you alluded to earlier, it's just going to make her mad if I ask her this. So what's the solution?
The solution is to ask. What's interesting is that there's also interesting research about how bad we are at really guessing what someone else is thinking and feeling. And even some of the most, I would say, like common advice that we often get, things like try to put yourself in their shoes or things like try to read their body language, doesn't work. It doesn't help. The only thing that has reliably been shown to work to find out what someone else is really thinking and feeling is to ask them.
Right.
Then it comes down to, you know, do we know how to ask well? That is what the book is really about, is how to ask well. And I talk about an approach that I call the ask approach, which is a combination of five practices that happen in a sequence that when we put them together, give us the greatest chance of really truly learning from other people around us.
Lay it on us.
All right. So number one is what I call choosing curiosity. We cannot really ask questions in a genuine way if we are not authentically curious. And on the other hand, when we are authentically curious, we give off an energy that makes other people want to share with us. They can sense that we're genuinely curious. Some people think about curiosity as a trait, like I have it or someone else has it or doesn't have it, or a state of mind that we're in. But I'm positing that curiosity is a choice. It's a decision that is always available to us to awaken ourselves to the possibility that we can learn something important from someone else around us.
Doesn't it correlate to intelligence or not?
I'm not sure if it correlates to intelligence or not. I'm really looking at it as no matter who you are, no matter what background you have, and I'm talking about a particular kind of curiosity, like not the curiosity about like what's the history of Russia or why do trees grow the way that they are, but I call it connective curiosity.
Connective. So what does that mean?
Connective curiosity is really the interest that we have in understanding someone else's thoughts, feelings, and experiences. And when we do that, it connects us to the other person. It makes us want to actually ask them questions. And it also, the other person can sense it as well.
So give me an example of a question. Like, ask me a question that shows connective curiosity versus not.
Absolutely. But I'll say, first of all, that choosing curiosity doesn't even come to asking questions yet. It is simply something that is an internal state that we have in our minds. So it's really a question that we ask ourselves.
So there's a mindset.
There's a mindset. And the question that I encourage people to center on is, what can I learn from this person?
What can I learn from this person?
If I'm sitting across from someone, especially someone who I might disagree with or somebody who I think, what do they have to teach me? If I start by saying, what can I learn from this person? It puts us in a completely different mindset. Then there's other questions we can ask ourselves, like, what might I be overlooking? What do they know that I might not know? Or what's a different way to interpret the situation than I'm interpreting it right now? Or even, what impact might I be having on this other person? Or what might they be up against? Those are various, what I call curiosity questions that we can ask ourselves to really awaken our desire to understand what's going on with someone.
Okay. So we have this, the mindset of choosing curiosity about the other person and connecting that back. And that will connect. We don't have to think about, oh, how does this relate to me? A magnificent me that will come.
Exactly. Exactly. So that is step one. Number two is basically, no matter how curious we are, if the other person doesn't feel comfortable telling us their truth, we're not going to learn from them.
Yes. And sometimes we don't know that they don't feel comfortable, because who cannot feel comfortable with sweet darling me?
Right. And I felt, I have literally had that same kind of like, why would anyone be intimidated by me? It's just me. I mean, I'm like, I've got all my own insecurities and all my own vulnerabilities. Who could possibly be not comfortable telling me something? But especially if there's any kind of power dynamic involved. And I've learned this the hard way when I've stepped into, you know, positions of authority and I thought I was approachable.
Right.
But really, people didn't feel comfortable telling me, especially when things were not going well.
Right. Which is what you most need to know.
When you most need to know it, and when I can actually do something to help. And so I learned a lot about the power of position when I'm interacting across lines of differences in authority, but also differences in other identity factors, whether race or gender or any other different, all of those two things can serve to challenge the psychological safety that people feel. And so that means we have to work extra hard to what I call make it safe. And that's step two.
Make it safe. But if I say, Jeff, do you feel comfortable telling me things? You're going to say, sure, but that doesn't mean
right.
That you
especially
are.
If I don't feel comfortable, I'm right. Not going to tell you that I feel comfortable. Yes. So there's a few strategies to making it safe. One of them is really about the way in which we connect, even literally the time and space and place where we're connecting. For the book, I interviewed a number of iconic CEOs who went out of their way to tell me that when they were trying to learn from people in their organizations, they would never invite them into their office and sit across the big CEO desk from them and expect that that person was going to feel safe and comfortable. They would sit down on a couch together. They would go to the employee's cafeteria. They would go to the employee's turf and ride along with them in their car on a sales visit. So really making sure that it's the time and place that the other person feels most comfortable and giving them that choice is so important. Another piece of it is opening up ourselves. And so if I want someone else to open up, it makes a big difference if I open up first. That could be opening up about even why I'm asking the question so they don't guess what my hidden agenda is. But it could also be opening up about something that I feel vulnerable about
right,
as well
right.
So that they can see it's okay to share something that's a little messy and invites reciprocity. And then the third thing I'll say about making it safe is I talk about it as radiating resilience, letting the other person know I'm resilient. I can handle what you have to say. I'm not going to crumble. I'm not going to hold you responsible for my feelings and reactions. And the more that people know that we can handle it, the safer they feel. Literally just before this conversation, I just sent an article off to someone to give me feedback on. And I said to them, could you give me your toughest, most critical feedback, please? And my hope was by saying that, that I would at least demonstrate to them, like, I want that kind of feedback. I'm resilient. In fact, I'm going to be disappointed if you're not giving me that kind
right,
of feedback.
Right, right. Good. But I can imagine myself trying to radiate resilience. The people who know me well, they would be like, is she in a good mood? Is everything going okay? Because sometimes when you get bad news or something, a setback on something totally related and you're preoccupied, you give off this vibe.
Yes. That it could be a barrier. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be a barrier.
So that's number two. Number three is now asking the questions. And so I call this pose quality questions.
Okay.
And I define a quality question very simply as a question that helps us learn something important from someone else. We all ask a lot of questions or make statements with question marks at the end that are not actually quality questions. I call these crummy questions. These could be questions like, don't you think you should see a therapist? Or have you considered to, you know, don't you, you know, maybe we should get Chinese. Don't you think that would be better?
Or my favorite would be, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? Now that veers into what I call attack questions, depending on the tone of voice that you use. But, you know, attack questions leave people feeling hurt. The other kinds of questions that are crummy, I call sneaky questions, which can lead people to feel manipulated because we're not really trying to learn from them. We're trying to just maneuver them to a certain kind of outcome.
Yes.
There's also just clumsy questions where we are genuinely curious, but we are maybe asking four questions at once. And so the person doesn't know really which one are they responding
right,
to.
Or, right.
So there's a whole bunch of ways to get questions wrong. But then quality questions, I think, are so powerful. I think of them almost in the same way as maybe a surgeon would think of their scalpel or all their other precision tools. Because depending on what we're trying to learn, we can actually draw from or design questions that really help us get specifically at that. So just to give you a few examples, one of the starting points, I feel like, is a question strategy that I call hear their headline, which is just simply, what do you think about this issue? Where do you come down on this? And it's so often the case that people hide the ball and don't actually tell us truly what they're thinking. And so by just asking to hear their headline, we can kind of get their top line view on something. But then we can't stop there. We have to really dig deeper. What leads you to that? Can you walk me through your thought process? What are some of the reasons that got you there? What are some of the concerns you were solving for with that suggestion? I suggest going even deeper than that, using a strategy that I call see what they see. So to say to them, you know, what are some examples of that? Can you illustrate that? Can you tell me some stories? What were you experiencing that, you know, that made you concerned about that? That sequence of questions from hear their headline to dig deeper to see what they see really gives us such a rich and textured understanding of where someone's coming from. One of the most overlooked categories of quality questions is what I call requesting reactions. So often we will state our point of view and assume that when the other person hears it, they will tell us what they think for real about it.
No.
And they might be thinking, well, I disagree, but they don't seem to care. And so requesting reactions can sound like, literally, what's your reaction to what I just said? How did that land with you? What might I be missing? Those are all different examples of requesting reactions. You're inviting people to share disconfirming data with you as well, things that can actually challenge your point of view, which is the most common things that people will withhold.
Right. Okay. That is great. What is number four?
Number four is all about what happens after we ask the question, which is listening. Because once we ask the question, it all comes down to, do we actually hear what they have to say? And there's a difference between listening versus actually hearing what someone has to say. And so listening to learn is really about what is most essential about someone else's perspective or experience. And I talk about the importance of expanding the channels that we're listening through. So many of us, myself included, I think bias towards listening for content. What is the person saying?
That's
what's the
useful
information? It's useful. Yeah, exactly. It's data, all that kind of stuff. But there are two other channels that matter just as much. The second is emotion. So what is the actual feelings that they are conveying? What's the tone? What are they expressing in terms of affect? And then the third one is action. What are the actions that they're taking in a conversation? Maybe they're repeating themselves. Maybe they're making requests of me. Maybe they are going along with what I say. Maybe they're pushing back on what I say, etc. But those actions are also a form of information that we can be taking in.
So if someone's repeating themselves and that's annoying, but what are we supposed to be taking away from that?
Well, first of all, it's important just to notice that. And I think it's important to be putting the three channels together. So what am I seeing in the actions? What am I seeing in the content? What am I seeing in the feelings? And are those congruent or not? If someone's repeating themselves, one thing we could, first of all, do is just notice that, but then we could ask, what's leading you to repeat that? I heard you say that before. Is there something I'm doing that's making you feel like I'm not taking that in?
Okay, that's very good. And what's number five?
And number five is my favorite. This is how you actually get the learning, because I am a learning nerd and junkie.
Yes, I believe it. Me too.
And I call it reflect and reconnect. This is how we squeeze the insight out of the actual conversation that we've had. I think a lot of us think that reflection is something that is a little bit mysterious. Maybe it's something that, you know, we can only do on a meditation retreat, or, you know, reflection can be very, very practical. Reflecting is, first of all, sifting out what's valuable that I heard from what can I let go. And then when I can get my hands around what's valuable, it's really asking myself three questions. One is, how does what I heard impact my beliefs and mindsets, or the story I'm telling myself about a situation? Secondly, based on that, what steps do I want to take? And third, is there anything I've learned that kind of pushes me to look more deeply at my deeper stuff, my assumptions, my ways of being, my deeper worldviews, because that's where some of the richest growth can happen. We turn it over. We can make these what I call three reflective turns to be really squeezing that learning out of it. That's the difference between just talking versus talking that actually goes somewhere. So often we will have the experience, but not really get the meaning from it. Reflection is how we derive the meaning from our experiences. What's important is to not just do that and then walk away. This is why I call it reflect and reconnect. The reconnection is closing the loop with the other person. It's going back to the other person to say, this is what I got from our conversation. And thank you for sharing that. And that may not have been easy for you to share. And it lets the other person know they didn't waste their time. And often people would wonder, did I waste my time? Did it go anywhere?
Does she hate me?
Right. Does she hate me, et cetera. So letting them know what we took away. It also gives the other person a chance to correct. Maybe we had the wrong takeaways. Maybe they can say, actually, I didn't mean for you to take that. I meant this instead. And then lastly, I think it radically increases the chances that they will want to continue to share with us over time because they feel so much more valued.
Right. My perception is this is like relationship building.
Absolutely.
Of the best kind. I'm just going to repeat the 5 steps. Are they steps?
They're practices, but they're sequential. So I call them steps too.
Yes. These practices of becoming a really skilled question asker. The first thing is to choose the mindset of curiosity. And Jeff gives us a specific kind of curiosity of not just, I wonder if this person knows what the capital of Namibia is, but rather, what does this person know? And what could I learn from this person? And to me, it's like you're focusing on the other person and not on how can I show that I'm competent?
Correct.
How can I show that I really know what I'm doing, which is what we tend to, tends to be the default, worrying about ourselves. And that just shifts that camera to this other person, leading with that curiosity and then making it safe for the other person to share. And I think some people listening, guys, you like, there may be people who don't feel safe talking to you. If you're an introvert, you know that we're often judged for being snobby or aloof. And, you know, so I think that we would all do well to put some thought into, first of all, not thinking that just because we know that we're great and wonderful, fine people that you can tell anything to, that not everybody may have that perception. And then 3 is posing quality questions. Do not ask a person what is wrong with them unless they're like falling down or something. maybe there would be a context for that question, but really questions that help us learn. Not a time for gotcha, not that there's ever a time for that, or sneaky, or trying. Sometimes, you know, we try to shape people's thinking by asking leading questions. So I think you have to be careful. If you're trying to give a lesson in something, then that's a different conversation from what we're talking about. And then 4 is listen to learn, and listen for not only for the information, but the emotion that you perceive. But sometimes somebody could be excited and you take it for anger because they're talking so fast. And so you might need to check on that. But, you know, notice for emotion and the actions that they're taking. And then 5 is the reflect and reconnect. This is where Jeff helps us squeeze value, this insight, by we think, does this match with what I think? Does this mean I should question my assumptions? Should I look deeper and let the person know? Like, give them kind of like, thank you so much. What I took away from this conversation is X, Y, and Z, and I really appreciate your sharing. And that, if it's not the beginning, it's definitely a time that I would say would be memorable, and you will have forged an alliance with that person after that kind of conversation, right?
Exactly. What a beautiful summary. Thank you for that synthesis of the ask approach. I feel like you really nailed it.
Well, I appreciate that. This seems to me most suitable for the one-on-one. So I want, before I let you go, I want you to help us with, what about asking questions in a meeting where we're not comfortable? It's not our meeting. It's with people, you know, that we don't know as well, and we want to make a good impression. And we tend to be like all focused on ourselves, but we really want to show that presence. And I think telling everybody what you know is definitely not the way to do that. What are your suggestions around that scenario?
I think I would just simply say that a situation with meeting, the stakes can absolutely feel higher, but we have to remember that it's still just a collection of individual people.
Okay.
And I would lean back towards curiosity. If I were to focus on something, the more we can focus on really what do we want to learn and how curious are we, rather than how do we look or appear to other people. Mm-hmm. The more authentic it will be. And in my experience, people respond to that kind of authentic curiosity. I would encourage leaning back into that. The more we feel curious, that can push away feelings of anxiety or imposter syndrome or other kinds of things like that. So I would follow that curiosity.
So be curious about these people that you may be thinking, oh, they're intimidating or I don't feel comfortable. So like a curiosity, like, what do they know? What is their approach? What are their priorities? And try to like study them.
Yeah. And what can I learn from them? And I guarantee you will be role modeling that for other people around the room as well. And that's a form of a leadership contribution too.
I love that. Did you hear that? You can be a leader just by studying and then asking questions from an authentic place of curiosity. Although sometimes in a meeting, if you're a lower ranked person, it can be kind of daunting to get a word in. But I think even if you're just looking to learn from everybody, someone once told me that in that situation, it might work that you can say, well, what I've learned today in this meeting is blah, blah, blah. First of all, it's a contribution to remind people what's been said, because sometimes we overestimate people's ability to remember what was said 5 minutes ago, or much less 45 minutes ago. And it shows people that you were actually paying attention.
Right, you weren't checked out. And I would say if you're feeling like it's not your place in a conversation, whether that's in a group or with somebody else, you know, you have a couple of additional options. One is you can take that offline. You can find somebody who was in the meeting and ask them, you know, after the meeting or in a different setting that feels lower stakes to do that. Or you can actually ask a question to test that and to say, I've got some questions that are going through my head right now. I don't know if now's the right time to ask them or not. Happy to wait. But if this is a time to ask questions, let me know. And I can pose some questions.
That's a very valuable question that you can use. I think of these as like tools, you know.
Absolutely,
and our tools, like you said in the beginning, the precision tools. So if you're not sure, say, I'd like to ask a question about X topic. Is this the right time or should I wait till later? And I think most of the time they're going to say yes, unless it.
Totally. And if it's not, it's not. But at least you're not calculating that privately in your head. You're taking your dilemma, you're making your dilemma public and you're checking it.
Yes. Wow, Jeff, so much value here. Is there something that I haven't asked that you think are very bright audience? I mean, these people are so clever and smart and good looking. I'm sorry you don't know them. I do know them. You don't know them as well. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you really want to leave with them?
I think what I would say is that this skill set, this approach called the ask approach, is really something that anyone can learn, even if it doesn't come naturally. And I think it's countercultural in a lot of ways.
Very.
We can all get better at this. There's a chapter in the book that's literally about how do you build your muscles at doing this kind of thing. Just like anything else, these are practices. They're not, you know, you're not going to be perfect from the beginning, but you can build your skill at them. There's step-by-step ways to do that.
And do you think they're applicable for a job interview?
Meaning, could you ask questions during a job interview?
Well, I mean, I know you can ask questions, but could you really lean into this in a job interview?
I think so, for sure. I mean, when I interview people to hire them, I am not...
Careful, everyone. If you're going to interview with Jeff, make sure you ask lots of questions.
I do take notice of the questions that people ask.
Yeah.
And, you know, do the questions reveal that they've done their homework beforehand? Do the questions reveal that they're willing to actually ask something that could be a tough question to somebody in power? How thoughtful are the questions? And so I think you can actually show up really well in a job interview if you ask great questions, assuming they're coming from a place of genuine curiosity and you're not just trying to use the questions in a performative kind of way.
Wow, yes. Let me show you how smart I am. I just thought of one more thing to add to this is that when someone is answering a question, they're much more engaged with the content and the conversation and you. So neurologically, you can tell me stuff all day long and I may catch some of it, maybe not. But when you ask a question, that fully engages the person. So this is something I've always encouraged. And I have my own portfolio of questions. But now I feel like I could go do brain surgery with these
there
questions.
There you go. I love it. I love it. I would love to hear your portfolio at some point, too.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing
your
wisdom.
Thank you for having me.
It's a total pleasure. And I will catch everyone the next time we get together. So was that not amazing? Like, I got so much about making it safe. And I learned, you know, I think everybody, when the first time they hear that someone is intimidated by us, we're like, what? How could that happen? But it's tricky, right? And in the remote working environment, it's even more tricky. Everything, all relationships are just a little bit more delicate in the virtual working environment because we're missing out on so much nuance and little communication signals. So thank you so much for listening. If you're not getting our weekly communication dispatch without delay, you need to visit www.speakupwithlaura.com and get on our Speak Up A-list. Have a great day. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.